Welcome to Inclusion Bites, your sanctuary for bold conversations that spark change. I'm Joanne Lockwood, your guide on this journey of exploration into the heart of inclusion, belonging, and societal transformation. Ever wondered what it truly takes to create a world where everyone not only belongs, but thrives? You're not alone. Join me as we uncover the unseen, challenge the status quo, and share stories that resonate deep within. Ready to dive in? Whether you're sipping your morning coffee or winding down after a long day, let's connect, reflect, and inspire action together. Don't forget, you can be part of the conversation too. Reach out to joe.lockwood@seechangehappen.co.uk to share your insights or to join me on the show. So adjust your earbuds and settle in. It's time to ignite the spark of inclusion with Inclusion Bites. And today is episode 125 with the title Inner Peace, Outer Progress. And I have the absolute honor and privilege to welcome Dr. Manoj Krishna. Manoj started the Human Wisdom Project and created the Happier Me personal development app to help reduce suffering, help each person lead a happier and more successful life. And when I asked Manoj to describe his superpower, he said he used to be a spine surgeon, but left surgery to start this project to create a better future for humanity. Wow, what an ambition. Hello, Manoj. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Joe. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolute pleasure. Absolute pleasure. So, Manoj, Inner Peace, Outer Progress. I'd love to hear more about some of your life, your history, and your passion.
So, you know, I was driving home from work one day after surgery, 10-hour surgery, you know, all day, and a hospital in the Middle East got bombed. But it was a children's hospital. It was about 10 years ago. And the kids were screaming on the radio. And I felt we humans, I was really moved by that. And I felt we humans need to do better. We can do better. And we have the wisdom in the world to do better. It's just not spread enough. Do you know what I mean? It's just not, it's not part of education. It's not part of our lives. And the understanding that could end conflict and war is so simple that children as young as 10 get it straight away. But why don't adults have carry this with them? And so I transitioned out of medicine. I felt called, you know, to do something about it. You know, you keep thinking some politician or some clever person is going to step up and do all this. And then you realize they aren't, and it's up to you. And you think, who am I? And then you realize you have the ultimate power because you're an ordinary human being. And the biggest change in the world, Margaret Mead said, that never doubt, paraphrasing, of course, that a small group of committed individuals can change the world. In fact, it's the only thing that ever has. And so I just started, and I've always been one to start walking and with not knowing what's going to happen next. So I left medicine. I started working in schools, talking to teachers about stress and anxiety. And one day the head teacher said, hey, come and talk to these kids. I said, but I don't know how to talk to children. I don't know what to say to them. He said, no, come along. You know. So I sat down with them and I said, will you look after me? It's my first time talking to kids. I'm a little bit nervous. And they said, oh, yes, yes, of course. They're only 7 or 8, you know. But I discovered something amazing, which is we're missing a trick in education because we think education is about stuffing their heads with what we know. And we think we're doing them a favor by doing that. But the root word of education, educere, is to draw out, you see. And what we really need to do in education is draw out their innate intelligence or wisdom, whatever word you want to call it. And every child, in fact, every adult has this innate intelligence or wisdom inside them, which can be completely life-changing. So when you sit down with kids as an equal and say, I might have gray hair, but we're the same human being, you and I. can we explore this subject together, whatever it might be? And they say, oh, yeah. And they're fearless, as you know, and they're open and beautiful. And I thought, oh, my God, if we can bottle up their wisdom and share it with the world, we really could not only help each child flourish, but change the future of humanity. They have an answer to war, to climate change, to all the conflicts in the world, to relationship conflict, to stress and anxiety. They have solutions which are so simple, but adults have forgotten that. So that's been my passion. So I started out on that journey, and then came COVID. I'd spoken in 50 schools and colleges and universities by then. And you see, it's the question that has the power to open the door to wisdom. And I wow. then discovered that, my goodness, if we could take this to the world. So that's why I created the Human Wisdom Project. And then I built this app called Happier Me. And all it does is ask you questions and helps you unlock your own inner intelligence. So I said recently, it's like walking into a room and putting the light on, except the light goes on in your own mind. So you can see clearly. You can make better decisions. You can live without conflict and with meaningful, deep relationships. You can manage your own emotions, manage your own mental health, live in peace with yourself and others. And you can contribute to making the world a more peaceful and more beautiful place. See, our time on Earth is so limited. It goes by in a flash. But if you live with this deeper understanding of yourself, which doesn't come from a book, by the way, or some religion, but it just comes from looking and learning about your own mind. And if you can do that, and it's so simple, you can make the most of your limited time on Earth.
Wow, that is so powerful to sitting and listening to you speak there. And my mind is absorbing it. I feel kind of drawn into the words you're using. And that Margaret Mead paraphrase quote around the small group of committed individuals can change the world, it made me reflect on, again, I'll paraphrase this, and I don't know who the original quote was. We always worry about time travel, being able to go back in time. And if we make a little change, we could ruin the future, or we could change irrevocably what happened. But we can make that change ourselves in the present tense.
Yes.
And have a lasting effect on the future that will occur, yet to occur. Yes. But we're scared to time travel back and make a little change. And we're scared to make the change today, that yes. little change. And I always reflect on a video, I think it's Accenture produced one, called Inclusion Starts With the I. And I was, the punchline for me is always, be the one. I can't change the world, I can't change everything, but I can change me. I can change how I show up. I can change how I take responsibility. And if I can exemplify that to others, maybe they will take inspiration from that change as well. So I think that Margaret Mead quote is yes. very insightful, and I think is the root cause of that. We can always push it off to somebody else, but we have to take personal responsibility.
And, you know, you talk to anyone about war, climate change, and say, oh, somebody else is going to have to fix that. It's beyond my pay grade. But what I hope to bring up and show in this conversation is that each of us can be this light. Find our own light, and then we can be beacons to shine in the world. And this process is simple. And each person can do it. And it can transform our life and the world. You see, the other thing people get frightened of is change. If I do this, then how will my life change? And the beauty of this approach is all you're doing is looking and learning about your own mind and your own. So you're just watching and learning. And the change happens effortlessly, you see, without conflict, without any kind of resistance. It just flows. Your relationships become happier. You become happier. And the scale of the problems, Joe, that we can address with this. I mean, just imagine if there was just one answer or one solution that could help prevent the 80% of people who are stressed, for example, avoid stress, or the 40 to 60% who are anxious, or the 80% of relationships that are in conflict and 50% break down. You know, or the one in six people who go and fall into addiction, substance abuse of some kind. Or listen to this one. 17% of young people are self-harming. Look at the amount of distress behind that. And then I came across one yesterday, because we've got an event coming up on preventing suicide on the 29th of May. It's a free event. But 1.7 million Americans in 2021 tried to take their own. So the extent of suffering in the world is off the scale. And this deeper understanding of ourselves and how our minds work can help us take charge of our thinking, how we feel, how we behave. And it's an answer to our own suffering. That's the beauty of it.
Yeah, as a species, we've been around, not obviously since the beginning of time, but 100,000 years, I guess, in some shape or form. Why haven't we solved this problem yet? You know, whatever you're saying sounds so fundamentally straightforward. Why is change such a barrier to people? What's the psychological barrier to change that we're fighting back against?
Well, everything begins with the human mind, which is very capable, but not wired to be intelligent. There's a difference. And we are never taught from day one how to understand our own mind. We're always taught about the world around us, but not ourselves. For example, we're all conditioned by our past experiences, and it shapes our opinions, our beliefs, our habits, everything. What we wear, dress, eat, what we think about other people. So I was talking at Newcastle University once, and I asked a lecturer, I said, where do your opinions come from, and why are you so attached to them? And he said, Manoj, I've been in education 30 years. Nobody's ever asked me that question. So we're not asking the right questions, you see. So shall I share a little story about how we could end war? Okay, and then I'll bring little kids.
I'd love to hear it. All right. I'd love to hear it, yeah. Love to hear it.
It's so simple, but, and of course, if you ask kids, they get it in one. I'll tell you two stories, and they're both true. So if, say, you're Russian and I'm Ukrainian, we're about to kill each other. We're on a war zone, or it could be Palestinian, Israeli, or Indian and Pakistan. Doesn't matter where we are, Shia, Sunni. And we just stop and ask one question. Why? Why are you and I about to kill each other? I've not done anything to you, Joe, and you've done nothing to me, but yet you and I are about to kill each other. Why is that? And we know that if we kill each other, we go back home and we'll get a medal. But if we were on the same side of the line and we killed each other, we'd go to jail. It's just, you see what I mean? How human beings are capable but not intelligent, right? And the more people I kill on that side of the line, the bigger my medal will be. But on this side of the line, I'll be called a mass murderer, go to jail, people will remember me, or, you know, and so on. See, it's the same thing, but you're taking a human life. Anyway, so we stop and ask why. Why are we killing each other? And then we realize, because you're Russian and I'm Ukrainian. Okay, why are you Russian? Why am I Ukrainian? Oh, because we grew up in Russia and Ukraine. Okay, is that enough to make us kill each other? Oh, no. You see, the same unconscious process of conditioning, which is our influences, have shaped your identity and have shaped without our own awareness, see? And yet we've become attached to that identity, you know? And then as soon as you become attached to an identity, somebody else can manipulate your thinking. Whether it's a religious identity, a political one, doesn't matter what it is. Nationalistic one, you know, like you're a Democrat, Republican, whatever, doesn't matter. The moment you and I see that deep down we're the same human being, your heart works in the same way as mine, we'll say, this doesn't make any sense. Why would we do that? And we would just put our guns down. Well, whatever, if we have some differences, we'll talk about them. So when I put this question to kids, 10-year-old, and I've got this recorded on video, I said, how are we going to end war? And they said, we need to realize we're the same ice cream, just different flavors. Chocolate ice cream would never go to war with vanilla ice cream just because it was different. See, but we humans do, because we don't see that we're the same human being deep down. And if we saw that really clearly, we wouldn't kill each other. You know, in the last century, we humans kill 200 million of our own. No other species on the world does that. And we think we're intelligent. See? So real intelligence comes from understanding our own mind and how it's functioning without our own awareness. And this is just one example.
Does some of it come down to cognitive dissonance or detachment of actions, consequences, impact? If I'm killing you, I don't kill you as a human being. I kill you as a stereotype, as a demon or a beast, or because the motivation we have is to protect what I have and to defend it against somebody who wants to take what I have. You talked about identity, so the motivation is the key. Is the understanding what motivates me to want to do that? What am I trying to protect? I feel a value that I think you want to take from me. That's the kind of fundamental, isn't it? Is that what you're trying to say?
Yes, but it also comes down to understanding identity. Because if you and I are brothers, for example, we might fight over the spoils, but we probably wouldn't kill each other, you know, over that. But if you and I have a different identity, which we're attached to, then we lose control of our own thinking. See? I mean, take Yugoslavia when it broke up. You know, the Serbs and Croats and the Muslims and Christians lived next door to each other for decades. And then suddenly they turned and started killing each other. Same happened in the partition of India in 1947. Hindus and Muslims slaughtered each other. So identity can provide comfort, security. I'll give you an example. So again, 10-year-old child. I said, you walk into a class, and it's got black children and white children. And you're a white boy. Where are you going to sit? He said, I'm going to sit with the white boys, white children. I said, why? He says, I feel safer. And I said, what else? He said, I think they'll understand me better. And I think they'll listen to me and so on. And I said, well, you talk to the kids on the other side of the class who are a different skin color to you. He said, no, I won't talk to them because I'll think they're a bit strange. I said, what happens in 3 months? He said, oh, well, we'll start having arguments. Because we're not talking to each other. We won't understand. I said, what happens if you're a country? He said, we'll go to war. 10-year-olds. And I said, what's the answer? He said, we have to mix with people who are different. And how often do we do that, you see? You know, we all want to be with people like us. But if we want peace in the world, we have to reach out and connect with others who are different. And it's just common sense. See?
That sounds... Fundamentally, we're lazy because affinity bias and people like us, people like me, it's easier, as you say, to have a conversation, to relate to each other. If you're trying to interact with people who have a different lived experience, a different perspective, a different identity, it takes more cognitive processing to have conversations and to understand that other person's viewpoint.
Yes.
So does it come down to laziness and our innate sense of just keeping the status quo? That's the challenge here. I don't want to invest time in finding out about you because I also don't think you want to invest time finding about me. Therefore, I just talk to my like-minded people. Is that what's going on?
Well, we're not curious anymore, you see, Joe. We are as children, but our education system does two things. It kills our love for learning. And it kills our curiosity. So when you're a child, you're really curious about everything. You're curious about other people you meet, and you want to know. But as adults, that's suddenly been gradually taken out of us. So when I meet someone who's different, I meet that person with fear, lack of interest. But actually, if you think about it, if I'm curious, there's so much I can learn from you. You know, you're... Everything that you're different about, it's an opportunity for me to learn, to enrich my life with that. You know, the books you read, the poetry, the food you eat, or whatever it is you're thinking, we've lost that curiosity. So our mind is wired in a particular way. And the way it's wired right now is creating all these problems. So every problem we humans face for which there's no easy answer begins in our thinking. And all the problems we talked about earlier. So it's simply logical that if we had a better understanding of this mind of ours, we could avoid those problems and overcome them much more easily. And because there's so many of them, I mean, for example, we could talk about addiction, if you like. You know, addiction is a problem of thinking. It's not a problem linked to alcohol or drugs. Obesity is a problem of thinking. It's not linked to food, because we know what we need to do, but we find it difficult to self-regulate our emotions and therefore our habits around food, drink, all that stuff. So this, if you begin this journey of just looking and learning about your own, it awakens your own inner intelligence. And you don't need to be educated for that, by the way. In fact, the more educated you are, the more clever arguments you have why, you know, you're okay as you are and you're not interested in learning. But I believe if we could bring this to every child and adult in the world, we could help them flourish in life, live in peace. After all, happiness is peace, you see. If you ask anybody, what do you want from your life? They say, I want to be happy. And happiness is really at the core of it is living with peace. Because all our pleasures, as you know, fade. You know, you have a new car next week, it's an old car. You go on holiday, as soon as you come back, it's finished, and so on. But peace is the thing that each human being wants. And no matter how much wealth and power and fame you accumulate, peace is the one thing that's missing in most human hearts. And this understanding of ourselves can bring us that elusive peace that we chase all our lives. And if I live in peace with myself, then I can live in peace with you. And then we can have peace in the world.
Use the word elusive there, in search of peace. Is the challenge we have is we're not able to set a bound or a definition of what happiness and peace means to us. So I found more joy by thinking about sufficiency, whereas in my life where I was looking for acquisition, for growth, for more, for bigger, for faster and newer, that was like a drug that I chased. And you could never be satisfied because it's always one more. You know, it's like dreaming about winning the lottery. You think, well, if I won £10 million, is that really enough? I really need £20 million to have the life I want. So we always tend to want this plus one, or plus 100, plus a million. And it's trying to rein that back to move that elusiveness of happiness to one of sufficiency and satisfaction with what we have now or realistically can achieve without wanting more. And I think, you know, listen to what you're talking about there, is the conflicts. It's often about acquisition of more. I want your territory. I want you to do what I want. And if I was sufficient in my mind thinking, I'm happy for you to be you and be who you are, I don't need you to be me or I to be you. Yeah. And I think it's that's the thing we're chasing is gluttony, for want of a better way of describing it.
But you see, the way our mind is wired, it's automatically driving us in that direction. So without understanding this hidden driver in our mind that's pushing us in that direction, you can try and stop it. Somebody might listen to me or you and say, no, tomorrow I'm going to try and be content with what I have. It doesn't work because the inner driver is so powerful, it's going to keep on pushing you. So let's take a moment to explore that. What is it in us that it drives us to accumulate more and more and more and never be satisfied? See? And maybe it's in us all is this deeper emptiness. Call it inner boredom, call it the void. And the more we get stimulated from the outside, the more we can cover it up. Call it loneliness. So, but the nature of pleasure is such that I get a new car, it's an old car. New shirt, it's an old shirt. So I need a new one, you see? So I'm constantly chasing something on the outside to make me feel good on the inside. But if we pause and ask, why don't I feel good on the inside? What's going on? Because if I could answer that question and find the peace within me, right? Then I don't need to chase all this stuff on the outside. Then I'll get what I need. You know, I don't, whatever it is I need. And the answer to that is first to wake up and realize this inner emptiness that we all have as human beings. We cover it up very cleverly, you know, through all our acquisitions and relationships and power and all of that. But the emptiness never goes away. So the answer is to lean into it, is to stay with it, and then it transforms to peace. But we are scared of doing it. So shall I tell you a story with children? Again, I love children and they're intelligent. So I'm talking to these kids and I said, okay, what makes you happy? And they said, Christmas presents, holidays, ice cream. So I said, how long does a pleasure last? I said, not long, as soon as you open the Christmas present. And I said, how do you feel after the pleasure ends? And then a little bit of a pause, and then they say, I feel bored, empty, and restless. I said, what do you need to do next? Oh, I need something more. So another present, you know, more ice cream. But I said, how has it got to be different this time? Or it's got to be bigger and better. So I said, what impact is this having on your lives? And this is in the Northeast, a very deprived area. And the kids say, well, there's no food to eat sometimes because we've spent all the money on things, you know, presents and whatever, pub and all that. I said, okay, what else can it do? He says it can cause pollution. And 10-year-olds have heard global warming. So they kind of say, okay, it can lead to global warming. Because all this pollution and consumption. So I said, what's the answer to global warming? And this little girl said, well, we have to find sources of pleasure that don't involve buying things, right? I said, like what? She said, like going for a walk with your friends, playing with your friends, going for a walk in the woods. I said, what else can we do? So then there's a long silence. And this girl at the back said, if we could find an answer to our inner boredom, then we wouldn't need to consume so much, or we wouldn't need to buy so much, right? Because that's what's pushing us to buy all this stuff. So I said, what's the answer to your boredom? And she told me this, what I said to you right at the beginning. If I stay with it, it goes away. It's just so moving and profound, the intelligence of children. And when you talk to adults about climate change, they think it's going to be solved by electric cars or whatever, but it's not. It's going to be solved by us connecting with our own inner intelligence, waking up to realize there's enough in the world for everyone. And this more and more that we're chasing, as you said right at the beginning, isn't making us any happier. It's not serving us. Do you know what I mean? Absolutely not serving us. I mean, I know people who go on 8 holidays a year. It's because they're just not at peace with themselves, you see. Or they come back from one cruise and 2 days later they're off on another one. And so on. So the purpose of life becomes to accumulate more and more money so you can buy more and more pleasure. And in the process, we wear ourselves out and become miserable. And of course, all the mental health statistics are there to show what's happening, you know, in our lives.
It's the boom and bust. And it is, as you say, we're working to accumulate. Then we offload our accumulation onto holiday. So we end up with this peak and trough of the brain chemicals. So we're rushing with stress. Then we're de-stressing, having a holiday, get back. We think, oh, we need to rush and re-stress to follow the next holiday. And so, yeah, we're doing this cycle. And it's a bit like taking sugar in your tea, I guess, where you don't necessarily want the drink for the fluid. You want the drink for the sugar. So you're craving the sweetness. And if you stop taking sugar in tea and coffee, you drink it for the drink, not for the sugar rush. And I've stopped drinking alcohol now. I haven't drunk alcohol for 860 something days. And I find that has changed my whole outlook on what I do for pleasure. I'm not trying to feed the alcohol monster anymore. I'm not trying to look for the alcohol to fuel my good time. I go and have a good time in doing other things. You said, let's go for a walk around the lake. Let's go and sit in the sun. Let's do something that I don't need to spend money on. I bought a 17-year-old car because I got off of the wagon of saying I had to have the newest model on 3-year loans and then turn it over and get another 3-year car, another 3-year car. I bought a 17-year-old car that's now 22 years old, and I don't think I ever need to replace it. Until I do, it'll be fine. And then one day I'll buy another 17-year-old car that I'll keep for another 5 years until it doesn't work anymore.
If you're not aware, it's a different way of thinking. In your own mind, Joe, and you're easily conditioned by the world around you, then before you know it, you would have bought the new car on a 3-year lease. By the way, we're not saying holidays buying things is wrong. We're just saying at the moment it's happening without your own intelligence operating. And all we're saying is when you wake up and your intelligence is operating, then you will make the right choices for you that serve you. We're not trying to dictate what people should and shouldn't do. We're just saying wake up and connect with your own inner light, intelligence, whatever word you want to use.
But that's play into the scarcity mindset, isn't it? Where if you believe a resource is scarce, you'll try and hoard it because you want to make sure you've got that resource if it ever becomes unavailable. And other people, we saw it in COVID, toilet rolls, rice, bread, flour. People were hoarding stuff for this scarcity mindset. They had to have it. Then nobody else could have it. And I guess that's the basis of war, isn't it? We had this big conversation about shooting and killing each other. Because people are worried that they're going to take something of theirs. People, those very primeval instincts were coming out in COVID around, I want, I have to accumulate. I don't need 10,000 toilet rolls, but I've got them just in case.
Yes, and you're driven to do that without even being able to stop yourself, you see. And the reason is that we don't understand the nature of fear. See, there are two drivers for human beings. Pleasure, we've talked about, but the other big one is fear. And fear is really interesting to understand. And when I talk to the kids, the explanation I offer them, which they really love, is like you're sitting in a cinema theater and you're watching a movie, and on the screen are all these scary images, and you believe them to be true, and you get frightened. And that fear then changes your thinking and your behavior. You don't see the projector is your own mind. See? It's projecting all these images onto the screen, which you believe to be true. So in a scary movie, if you wake up and realize, this is just a scary, it's a movie, it's fine. Your fear goes away. But we don't have that illusion continues in our own life. So once you understand that your mind exaggerates the fears of the future and it catastrophizes in a way to try and protect you, but quite often it doesn't serve you. And then, of course, fear turns to anxiety. And we did a survey recently. 60% of people said, I've got moderate to severe anxiety. And you can imagine how crippling that is. So once you wake up and realize your anxiety is not caused by your lack of money or your worry about your health or your kids or whatever, it's caused by your own mind creating your own suffering. So the work you need to do is on the inside. And as soon as you wake up and realize that, then you begin your own journey of learning and you're free. Or it's a bit like you wake up from a scary dream. And in the dream, you're really frightened. You're in a sweat. But as soon as you wake up and realize, that's just a dream, your fear vanishes. Similarly, when you wake up and realize your fear and anxiety is being created by your thinking, and it may not be real, but it's shaping your life in ways that doesn't serve you, then you're free. So I gave this talk once and I said, from tomorrow, we're all going to stop eating because this half of the room is frightened of being attacked by that half of the room. So we're going to use that money and buy guns instead. They all started laughing. But I said, that's what countries are doing. That's what we human beings are doing. We spend, $1.6 trillion on arms every year, and 1 billion people go hungry every day. And several in this country and the richest countries in the world. So, and it's all.
And we have a major country in the world advocating more guns makes you safer. Yeah. If I don't have a gun, I'm more at risk. And what I need to do is buy a bigger gun, so I'm less at risk. And I need to buy more guns, so I'm less at risk. And that's an inherent societal belief.
Yes.
In certain countries that we can all think about.
Yeah, but it's all based on fear and conditioning.
Yeah.
What I mean is that there's a hidden mind operating in the background without our own awareness. We think we're in charge of our life, but actually we're not. This hidden mind of ours is running our life for us. And when we wake up and can see clearly what it's doing, putting the light on, shining a light inside, we can then be in charge of our own life and make more intelligent choices for ourselves. So we can live in peace with ourselves, with others, be happier, have relationships with meaning, depth, without conflict. Do you know, 60% of people in the world feel alone. 30% of them are in relationships. And this is because we haven't learned the art of relationship. Or we think love is what you are making going to help me make me feel. Do you know what I mean? So if you make me feel good, I'll say I love you, but I'll do things for you. But the moment you stop making me feel good, Joe, I stop loving you. I say I don't love you anymore. And I genuinely convinced, my brain convinces me I'm loving you, but actually I don't see. I'm just loving me. Do you see what I mean? So
it's a codependency thing, isn't it? Where we're trying to secure ourselves by the word love creates a commitment and an ownership, maybe. And I need you to make me feel good, sort of thing. So therefore, I use those words. But I see what you're saying there. It's creating that codependency and commitment.
Because if two people are doing that, I'm looking to you to get my needs met. You're looking to me, and if for by any chance we do that, then of course we have a happy relationship. But if we're not aware of this process in the background, then you can easily see how conflict happens. And our loneliness comes not because we don't have people in our lives, but because we don't have depth of connection with them. So I was talking to these kids in a university. I was talking about loneliness. And this boy said, I don't know how to have a deeper relationship with anyone. I've never been taught. Nobody's ever told me how to do that. So this is what my passion is, to bring this understanding of understanding our own mind into education so we can have relationships with meaning, depth, you know, so our lives can be richer overall, right? Because after all, our relationships are the foundation of our own long-term happiness, right?
You're talking away. I'm thinking about, you know, going back to the happiness side, the relationship side, the human mind, the psyche. And my mind was wandering, thinking around behaviors. And I was thinking about flying aircraft, scheduled flights, as an indicator of human behavior. And that I'm simplifying this down to two types of people. One type of person wants to get on the aircraft as quick as possible, to be first, to fight the race to the front of the queue. And there's the other sort of person, which I put myself into the category of, I want to be last on that plane. I don't want to inconvenience everybody, but I want to just literally walk on the plane, sit down, strap myself in, and then we go. And I want to maximize that. And I also am one of the people that wants to be last off the plane. If you want to fight for it, you want to stand up and queue, you want to get all upset around this and be all uncomfortable, that's fine. I'll just sit there and fold my arms, go back to sleep and wait for the plane to be empty and go, right, unbuckle, stand up, grab case, walk off. The queue up passport's gone. The bags have already arrived on the carousel and I walk straight out. But you see some people get really, really, I don't know, anxious, aggressive, yes, demanding, tense, whatever it may be. And despite focusing on the plane doesn't get there any quicker whether you're at the front or the back. I always try and book a seat as far to the back as possible because I don't care. I don't need to be part of the melee of people fighting with each other. And it's just, again, it's that thinking about the mindset and what you're trying to achieve. But people don't. They're so busy, and you say, going back to this conflict and killing each other, we're so busy worried that someone's going to take something that's ours. And we feel we have to defend ourselves all the time.
So you see, the door to intelligence opens with a simple question. Why am I thinking this way? Why am I feeling this? Why am I behaving in this way? For example, jumping on, you know, the plane story you said, rushing. Does it matter? So asking ourselves the question is what helps us pause, and then our intelligence can kick in. But if we have never been taught, Joe, to question our own thinking and our own behavior and what we feel, because you see, right now, our mind is wired to convince us that what we think is true, what we feel is true, what we see is true, you know, and we never we justify everything. If I'm smoking, I'll justify it. If I'm about to kill somebody, it doesn't matter what I'm doing. Even Hitler, you know, justified the killing of all the people he did and so on. So everybody justifies their own actions. That's how our mind is wired. Intelligence comes when you can pause and ask why. What am I doing? See? And then that opens the door to a deeper experience of life. And, you know, it's a really enriching experience. So right now, our minds are wired to look on the outside for things to make us feel good on the inside. But if you live with this inner intelligence or wisdom or whatever you want to call it, you're nourished from the inside. And as you say, then you can relax, sit on the back of the plane and wait for everyone to take off because you know it's a smart thing to do. Or you might learn chasing money all the time. Well, you've got to actually pause and enjoy your life because we spend every day working for tomorrow, right? Or so many people do, you know.
So we're enlightened. We're living in the echo chamber of kind of getting some of this stuff that you're talking about. You've got no resistance for me here at all. I'm with you on everything you're saying. But we recognize that the facts don't change people. You know, we can tell people to be blue in the face that doing this, cause and effect, do this, that will happen. And people will ignore that. They'll risk take. They'll drive too fast. They'll drink too much. They'll stand on the edge of the platform, knowing full well they should be standing back. They'll rush to the front of the baggage carousel. When standing back and waiting for your bag to appear is obviously the best solution, but now we have to be at the front. So how can someone who's listening to this podcast maybe reflect on what we've been talking about? And what's that first step they can take to enlightenment, to change, or that nugget that's going to nudge them into a slightly different orbit of thinking? What can they do?
Yeah, I think the first thing is to want it. See, the other day I was doing an event and a lady gave this beautiful example. She said, it's like learning a new language. First, you have to want to learn the language. So what is it that's going to make you want to, you know, understand your own mind? You might want to be less stressed or less anxious or less lonely or have a happier relationship or deal with an addiction problem, or you might want to be happier. You might want actually to be emotionally intelligent, which will help you be successful in the world. You know, if you can manage your emotions, you're emotionally intelligent. And they say our success comes from emotional intelligence more than whatever skills we may have picked up. So you have to decide what's important for you. And once you decide, then as you're saying, then there's a knowledge part. Okay, the learning the language as some grammar and basics. And we've developed an app we'll talk about which helps with all of that called Happier Me. And then you have to practice. Right? Then you have to actually, it's got to be a living thing in your life. You practice the language. And unless you practice it, it won't stay alive. So similarly, you've got to then notice what's happening in your thinking. Ask yourself, why am I thinking that way? What's going on? And then you go deeper and explore. And you see, it's like, again, if you have that curiosity, then you think, wow, I didn't know that about myself. So it becomes a process of self-discovery. And that self-discovery brings joy, brings change, and enriches your life in 100 ways.
Yeah.
Everyone can do this. Everyone can do this. There's no stereotype for this.
It's as you say, it's the fundamental is the epiphany, the wake up, the thing that's going to nudge you, the drive to change. But the reality is most people will never ever find that drive. And the ones who do are halfway on the road to enlightenment anyway. So it's what, you know, there'd be people listening to this podcast going, what are they on about? What are they on about? Why do I need to do this? I'm perfectly fine. I'm perfectly happy. It's what's the trigger? How do we say we want to try and find something within us that are going to go, aha, okay, now I get it. What's that thing that's going to trigger me?
I've just been writing a blog, Joe, on the 5 barriers to overcoming stress. Okay.
Hmm.
Number one is, I may not even know I'm stressed. By the way, when I use the word stress, it could easily be anxiety or conflict. It doesn't matter what it is. So firstly, I may not be aware that this is what's happening to me. Secondly, I may think, I'm bigger than that. I'm a man or whatever. I never get stressed. You know, I have a perfect relationship. So you're in denial, basically. You're just not aware. Or it could be that you just don't think it's possible to be anything other than how you are. You don't think it's possible to not be stressed. Or you don't think it's possible to not be anxious or have a happier relationship. See, because you've just grown up thinking that's the norm. Or then you might think, well, it's somebody else's bloody fault, you know? Why should I have to change? Somebody else needs to change. Or my job needs to change. Or I need to have more money to be less anxious or whatever. So the change has got to come from the outside. So therefore, it's got nothing to do with me. And even if they listened to us and said, okay, I agree, I need to change. They don't know how to. Or they're frightened of looking at themselves. So there are a few barriers, but each of them can be overcome quite simply, I think. And we've created a toolkit to help people do that if they're really interested.
Okay, yeah, that's interesting. So I think what I'm kind of hearing is that there's an external factor that's going to cause that trigger.
Yes.
So as you say, a burnout, an illness, being made redundant, car crash, something is going to hit you in your life that's going to jolt you involuntarily out of your orbit for it long enough for you to see a different path. If it's a minor bump, you probably won't, but if it's a significant bump, and that's the challenge we face, is we need something really, really fundamentally knocking on our door to make us wake up and go and reevaluate. And I mean, I've been through this. I've been through something that knocked my life several lanes to the left. And I know people who have had a very similar wake-up call for various reasons, which has provoked life-changing thinking and activity. But most of us who would benefit from this will wait until that point in their life where they just keep heading. They're arriving at 60 miles an hour towards a brick wall, and it's only the brick wall that's going to make them stop, not their power on the brake pedal.
So interesting, Joe. Let me ask you a question. Knowing what you know now, do you think it would have been smarter for you to have avoided all those challenges in your life? Right. So someone listening to this conversation, I'll ask them, do you think you're intelligent? Do you think you're smart? Everyone says yes. If you are, you're a thinking person. You've got a beautiful brain, the most capable in the universe. Use it to reflect on your own life. Why wait for disaster, trauma, self-harm, you know, all of that stuff? You can change your life today. Just take the first simple step of looking and learning, asking why. What's going on? Just be curious. See? You don't want to be in a car crash in your life, metaphorically or literally. You want to avoid car crashes in your life, right? So many people end up with burnout, depression. And if I said 70% of the people in the world are going to burn out, and you're in the 30%, if you're really smart, you won't wait till it happens. You'll say, right, I'm going to make sure I don't burn out. I'm going to find out what's going on. If I learn, I'm getting married, and I learn 50% of marriages end in divorce. I'm not going to sleepwalk into that. I'm going to wake up and do something about it. So I'm not that statistic. And of course, the wisdom is there if you want. Or if I wake up and realize 60% of people are anxious in the world, and then someone comes along and says, you don't have to be. Something can be done about it. So we have that capacity for intelligence. It's just we need to A, wake up, B, realize it's possible to change, and C, it's not that difficult. Children as young as 10 get it like that. See?
Yeah. Even though I know what I know, I'm still not convinced that I will take preemptive enough action without something becoming a problem next time. So I've gone through a period of change. I've gone through a period of reflection. I've gone through a period where I completely relate to what you're saying is, but I can foresee myself being in another plateau Well, again, I'm blissfully unaware until something else happens to cause me to reset again. So it's almost like a step-tooth waveform. I'm plateauing, staying steady, plateauing, staying steady, and going from this like a sequence of epiphanies.
Yes.
Hopefully in time. Maybe I'm more. The
problems will be repeated until the lessons are learned. You know?
Yeah.
So, yeah. But it's, of course, it's.
But I'm probably more open.
Yes.
I'm more open to be aware sooner. So the resistance to change will it likely be less than it ever was. And every time that I'm realizing that change is necessary, I'm more willing to embrace it. But there's still a lag on that curve, isn't there? There's still going to be a slight delay while I reevaluate, reincorporate, and then adapt. And I guess what we're trying to do here is we're trying to minimize that curve of acknowledgement.
Yes.
To take action.
Think about why people learn another language. It's not, there's no pain point they're trying to solve. They're doing something for the love of it because they want to get something out of it. So similarly, learn about the most important person in your life, you. Learn about how to be at peace and happy, which is the number one thing you're chasing in your life. Learn not to waste your life so that you don't want to be, you know, on your deathbed and think, oh my God, I just wasted my life with suffering when I could have lived with joy. You know, I could have had really happier relationships. So why didn't I? What happened? So here is the jewel of understanding. It doesn't come from a book or religion. Don't worry. Nobody's telling you what to do. But here is a jewel that can completely transform your life and make it richer, more beautiful. Why would you not look at that and just be curious? You don't have to believe anything anyone's saying, least of all me, but you could just be curious. Maybe there's something there. Let me have a look. There's no harm done looking. See what I mean that way?
Yeah, and I think going second right back to something you said right at the beginning, educate, derives from, was it the Greek or the Latin? To draw out.
Yeah.
To draw out. Yes. And I think that's the key here, is trying to draw out what we think and feel ourselves, expose that, draw out of others of what they're thinking and feeling, and then be able to make better decisions that don't involve conflict or gluttony, I guess.
Yes, all of that. And my passion is that this subject of learning about yourself, call it what you like, self-understanding, should become part of education. So as much a part of the curriculum as maths and science, because it could save us from all that conflict and suffering, number one. It could help everyone live in peace, no matter what you're doing in society. You know, you're the barista in the coffee shop, you're cleaning the streets, you're the prime minister, doesn't matter. You live a rich, fulfilled life on the inside. Your inner life is rich. And we could create together a better future for our children and for humanity as a whole. And it's not that far off, you see. We have all this wisdom in our hands to make this a reality today.
Manoj, thank you. This has been fascinating. I've really enjoyed diving into this with you. How can our listeners get hold of you? How can you start more conversations?
So people can find me on LinkedIn, Manoj Krishna. You can visit our website. It's happierme.app. You can download the Happier Me app from all the stores and begin a conversation. Reach out. It's manoj@happierme.app is my email. If this resonates and you'd like to be part of our mission to help reduce suffering, to help people lead happier and more successful lives, and to create a better future for our children and for humanity, then get in touch. I think we have it
just in our hands
to do something really beautiful in the world and leave a legacy for our children who look back at our generation and think, okay, they messed it up, but then, okay, they try to do something about it. Or at least equip the next generation with the wisdom to be able to address these challenges we face.
Yeah, so I've just found the app on Apple. And yeah, I'm going to take a look at that. It's
no obligation to buy anything. Yeah. Go ahead and have a look.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. It's been a fabulous conversation. I've really enjoyed it. And good luck with the app and good luck with spreading happier me to everybody in the world.
Joe, it's been my pleasure. Thank you so much.
As we bring this conversation to a close, I want to express my deepest gratitude to you, our listener, for lending your ear and heart to the cause of inclusion. Today's discussion struck a chord. Consider subscribing to Inclusion Bites and become part of our ever-growing community, driving real change. Share this journey with friends, family, and colleagues. Let's amplify the voices that matter. Got thoughts, stories, or a vision to share? I'm all ears. Reach out to joe.lockwood@seachangehappen.co.uk and let's make your voice heard. Until next time, this is Joanne Lockwood, signing off with a promise to return with more enriching narratives that challenge, inspire, and unite us all. Here's to fostering a more inclusive world, one episode at a time. Catch you on the next bite.